I'm still picturing Jack on his motorized Jack scooter, Jack from Lost, going down Highway 49. It's like just like the slow hum of that scooter.
The slow hum of shame.
Oh my gosh.
And
dude, so much poop.
Your dog just looked up when y'all did that.
Of course.
My dog always looks up when I do that. I trained it. I love it when I make Brad laugh and James just gives me a pleasant nod, which is affirming, and it continues my behavior. but thanks for the chuckles, Brad. I appreciate it, dude.
Oh, man. Oh. I'm known for my chuckles, and when I just can't stop.
That's a good thing to be known for.
There's definitely worse things.
Oh, sure.
So we don't exactly have a topic for this episode. I had said I have a story that we could do as an intro, expecting it to be short, but we got into it. And we got Brad popped, and I was feeding off that energy.
God, it's so easy to feed off that energy. You just want to go and go, you know. God, it's good to have somebody who his laugh is one of the reasons you're excited to see him. And as you're continuing to tell the story, even if it's a sad or I mean, honestly, kind of disgusting story. It's good to see him glow.
That's what brings out my joy.
Yeah, for sure, man. So, Brad, it's good to see you're still in your storage unit. I think your wife is doing a really good thing for you by letting you rent this storage unit and then record in it. So,
you know, I got to admit, it's actually grown on me. I actually like it quite a bit. I mean, I'm just staring at a wall, really. But it's a nice wall. And I mean, I can, you know, when we have visitors over, like we're going to tomorrow, I can just shut the door and they don't even know that there's like a little mini recording studio.
Recruiting?
In this recruiting story. So they don't even know that there's a little recording studio here in this closet.
So I'm assuming you haven't received James and I's present, which is a giant blown up picture of us
tandem
posing
bicycle.
On a tandem bicycle.
I have not.
Gosh. Double denim.
We're riding around as part of the group of denim kangaroos wearing those denim overalls with the big pocket in the front.
Thank you for explaining that. I just pictured a kangaroo that was made out of denim. Or it's this like really bizarre gang in Hattiesburg and they call themselves the Denim Kangaroos.
They're all 30 to 40 years old and only ride tandem bicycles. It's the least feared gang since West Side Story.
Yeah, they just go around and occasionally they'll get off those bicycles and then they bounce together in tandem, like the tandem bicycles. Bam!
Is that the sound that bouncing like a tandem bicycle makes?
Dude, when you're a part of this gang, it's bizarre the sounds that come out. But yes, I don't know how it works, but that's what I see in my brain. Boing.
We don't actually get to use language. It's just interpretive interactions.
Yep. Yeah, that's how my brain's working.
There
so.
Are tons of ribbons involved in this gang.
Long ones, so you can dance.
Oh, and sure.
And there's always at least one person who's keeping beat with a tambourine.
Yeah. I've been to those rallies. I've been to Venice Beach a few times. I will tell you, man. The strangest thing I've ever seen was actually in Venice Beach the first time I ever went to Venice Beach, you know, you hear about it, you think, okay, it can't be that nuts. And it really isn't that crazy for real. You know, there's the whole Muscle Beach thing, you know, where all the bodybuilders go and work out. And that's interesting. And there's always one guy in an American flag Speedo working out. But the first time I ever went, I had been there for about an hour and I was about ready to leave because, you know, once you see strange people walking around for a while, you're pretty good. All of a sudden, I hear this music take off and I look over to my left and there is a single man in roller skates, in like really short shorts and a windbreaker jacket that was unzipped halfway.
Yes.
And he was grooving.
Please tell me he had a big boombox.
I didn't see what was making the music, okay, but he was grooving. And then all of a sudden it was like, what was those things that got popular like last year where all of a sudden all these people would just start dancing? What was that? You remember?
Like a flash mob?
Yeah, like a flash mob. So all of a sudden, it was like a flash mob just happened, but it wasn't that. It was just like people got inspired by dancing roller skate, man. Yeah, and everybody else showed up, and they're dancing roller skates, and they all start dancing. So I thought, well, this is kind of fun. So I watched that for a while. All of a sudden, I get to watch in this guy, and he is grooving hardcore. And all of a sudden, and I'm wanting to curse. I don't know the actual thing. I crap you not, if you will. He did the splits and then pulled himself up by his jacket and then just kept on grooving. Yeah.
That's the 90s equivalent of pulling yourself up by your bootstraps. Pulling yourself up by your windbreaker.
By your windbreaker.
I mean, what was more fascinating about it, to me anyway, wasn't the fact that there was this crazy flash mob of dancing roller skaters. It was that really everyone around them wasn't really paying attention to them. And this was just a normal, apparently Sunday afternoon occurrence.
Just another day at Venice Beach.
Just another day at Venice Beach.
So I think we're gonna tell some stories today. Just in honor of James' story that's to come, and you will enjoy it thoroughly, I thought I would tell a story
I thought you said too common, and I was like, I don't know if that's common.
Oh, yeah. Believe me, listeners, when I say that there's nothing common about this story. And if you've had experience like this, do us a kindness and let us know. I mean, it's crazy. I drove by the Walgreens you reference in the story to come, and I didn't stop. So I'm going to just leave it at that. I really wish I could talk about your story right now because I'm thinking about the multiple places I did not stop today because I needed to go to the bathroom. So the first story I'm going to bring up today and involves my inadequacy. It may be shocking to you guys that occasionally I fall short. You know, occasionally I fall on my face. James is especially surprised right now. He's been around me for most of my life, and I'm basically just a winner. So
I was just thinking how sad it was that you starting with, this is a story about my inadequacies, and I didn't know which story it was.
You're going to have to be more specific. So.
Yeah, there's a certain,
a lot more information.
There's a certain vulnerability that comes to sharing about my inadequacies. This one happened recently, and that's the beauty of being humbled periodically, which I think is important or even absolutely necessary for people in order to have a pretty healthy personality, etc. But I play guitar a little bit on the side. Brad plays a little bit of guitar. Brad's gone through some strange phases where he like basically just gave up on drumming and focused primarily on guitar. I'm still a little bitter about that, Brad. We can work that out maybe on a future episode. 'Cause Brad was and is was such a good drummer. But I had to pick up a little acoustic guitar to play at church occasionally when our worship leader slash mayor is out.
Our worship mayor?
Yeah, our worship mayor. The mayor that we worship as he plays guitar. Sir Worship Toby. Tobes, keep up the good work, man. We missed you on Sunday, especially. But I...
Yeah, we did.
Good God. That was really hurtful. That was really hurtful. But I work in nursing homes for my job, and occasionally I'll go volunteer and play music for the population there. And I go to this nursing home that has especially difficult residents there that have pretty serious issues, whether or not strokes or, you know, advanced dementia, that sort of thing, or just psychosis in general. But if you ever want to be put in your place, like if you want somebody to just tear you down in the most true and authentic way possible, go bring your musical talents or lack thereof to a nursing home.
Or just around children. Basically, anybody that it's appropriate for them to wear a diaper, play music around.
Exactly. Exactly. So I have my list of songs that are almost nursing home appropriate. You would think that if I was smart, I would play songs that are a little bit older. And I do some of those, like I'll do some Bob Dylan, occasionally, et cetera. But,
lots of Barry White. It gets weird.
A lot of Barry White. So much Barry White. A little Neil Diamond. I do a little bit of Neil Diamond.
And everybody should do a little Neil Diamond.
Yeah. They like when I play John Denver. Are y'all familiar with John Denver? You guys some enjoy some country road?
I've heard of the town he founded.
Ooh, it's a big one. It's really, y'all Google that right now. It's true. John Denver founded Denver.
I just always assumed that's the way it worked. Denver just never existed until,
right,
what, the 60s?
I do enjoy playing like singer-songwriter stuff. Like I'll play some Ray LaMontagne. Love me some Ray. I play some Dennison Whitmer. Just music that I'm used to.
Let's just take some time for you to talk through your whole catalog.
I'm just going to list this in honor of James' future story. I like to open with some Jolene. That's one of my favorites. Like I love the song Jolene by Ray LaMontagne. So I'm 45 minutes through this set and I've gotten nothing from this crowd. Like I got a couple nods. I got claps from, I think, some of the staff that felt bad for me. Like they gave me some claps. They're like, thank you so much. You have a nice voice, which I immediately knew was them trying to make me feel better. I get 45 minutes through this set, and I've watched three or four of the residents actually physically roll out in their wheelchairs, which some of them struggle to even do that. Like that's how not ambulatory that they are, but they left.
These people have not moved themselves in a wheelchair in decades, and so desperately needed to get out of that room that they... Miracles happened for people to escape what David was doing.
I was basically a physical therapist by proxy.
You were essentially the televangelist gets people
absolutely.
On the thing.
He was Benny Hinning people with music.
I was, dude. And they were falling over.
Musically smacking them in the forehead.
Yeah, sure was,
getting them
dude.
Out of that room.
Dude, I was like, anybody want to hear some Metallica tonight? I got it. Yeah, So my morale is slowly going down, but I do see some people locked in, and so I'm like, this isn't terrible. It's not great, but it's okay. And that's when it happened. In the hall outside of this cafeteria that I was playing in to about 20 people, I hear this, stop it! Just shut it up! Just stop it! Just this screaming. And I'm mid-song. Right, as this screaming's happening, and I look up and I could see this lady who has like rolled her wheelchair away so she doesn't even have to look at me as I'm playing and is screaming about what's happening.
Imagine, you know, the episode of The Office when Toby comes back and Michael Scott's not aware of it, and then he goes back That was this lady listening to David play music.
No, no. So I see these two staff members who had already clapped for me and already felt bad enough for me running at this lady who's screaming now, cursing at this experience that I'm giving to them out of the kindness of my heart or something. And the lady, and I hear, like, I'm at a soft part in this song that I'm playing, which I'm wishing it was maybe a little bit louder. And this lady's like, Mrs. So-and-so, do you want to go smoke? And she's like, I don't have any cigarettes. Like, just like, this music's got to stop. This music's got to, get him out of here. Get out. And they're like rolling this lady out the door towards the courtyard to smoke. And I finished the song and they're about to get her out. And she turns and she was like, well, at least the last one wasn't that terrible. And then that was it. And I finished my set.
So as he said previously, this Sunday, he had a bit of a mishap during one of the songs that he was leading. And it took everything in me to not start screaming because he had just told me this story like not long before. And it was very tempting for me to do my best impressions of that one.
Oh, man. I don't know how small I would have got if you've done that.
It would have been my favorite day ever.
I would have melted. Yeah. That's the good thing about best friends. They already know your insecurities, and they just like to leech onto them and just let you know where you stand. So that was my experience in the nursing home. At the end, they didn't immediately book me again, but I'm expecting to call any day to have me come back and play for the residents. So. You have a story for us?
He's just got to intro it. Okay. Well, this past Sunday, I was at dinner with a couple friends, and I got a call from my buddy Ken.
Ring, 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 ring. Hey, James, what's up?
That's not at all what Ken sounds like.
Hey, man. Can you help me with something?
So what he said was, I feel like I can't call myself a Christian or a Mississippian right now. And then tells me about how he, that morning, had met a homeless man out in, I guess it's a different town. Is Oak Grove a different town?
I'm gonna say it is.
It's
outside of Hattiesburg city limits.
So it's essentially the same town. Like, you can't tell the difference between them, but slightly on the far end of our town from where I live. And he had met this guy, and the guy was in a wheelchair. He had been hit by a truck, and he was telling me that this guy needed help and that he didn't feel good going to a hospital or anything to get cleaned up because he's not able to get out of his wheelchair. So he had defecated all over himself and urinated and all of that all over himself and couldn't get it cleaned up. And so he was like, I need you to go with me to convince him to go to the hospital. He said, you can convince me I'm wrong. So obviously you can convince anybody of anything. So we need to go do this because I want to help this guy and you're the only person who can convince him to go. So it's like, all right.
Ken, giving you some sweet talk there, man. I really like that.
I guess. That's Ken's form of compliment, I guess.
Yeah, it was a nice compliment.
I need you to make people do things.
Yeah.
So
force your will on somebody.
Right. So I go pick Ken up, and this is 9:30 or so on Sunday night. And when I pick Ken up, he says, so I talked to one of the people from, like, the Homeless Coalition and stuff to try to see if she could help. And she sent me this text that says he's got a history of drug addiction and mental health and all of those things. And has already been put into a couple facilities and been kicked out. So that's my intro information into this person. And I'm a firm believer that there's a lot of people who are definitely jerks who make helping them really difficult and all of that, but still deserve help. Like, we should humanize people no matter how hard they make it. So he calls this guy to try to find out where he's at after I pick up Ken. And turns out he's at between this gas station and a Krispy Kreme. So we pull into the Krispy Kreme parking lot.
Real quick, did you order donuts?
No.
Okay.
I don't know about you, but I find if I'm about to interact with somebody that I know is going to be covered in their own waste,
right,
I normally don't pick up food.
Okay. That's a fast tip for our listeners. Yeah.
For anybody who's going to be in this situation.
Sure.
Don't get donuts.
Clean them up first, then get donuts.
Yeah. So I go and talk to him. And another thing for people who don't interact with homeless people a lot, typically the value of a homeless person is their story, because they have to tell you a concise story that makes you care or feel guilty or whatever, just enough to give them things. And so it's a refined story that may or may not be true at all, but you have to kind of work through that to show that you're not somebody who's just there to make yourself feel better or whatever. Like, it takes a little bit to get through to be able to have a relationship with people who've been on the streets for extended periods of time. That typically is the way it ends up working. So I'm fully aware that most of the stuff he's going to tell me might not be true. So he tells me all the story of abuse that he says he's gone through at these facilities that he was in, of them not changing his linens after he would wet the bed, and all kinds of various things that he said he's documented on his phone, and how he's been mistreated at the hospital and all of that. And he had been hit by a truck, and he said that while he was on the ground with his hip shattered and all of that, somebody walked up and kicked him in the face and that kind of stuff. So he paints this picture of, like, I am the ultimate victim. Everything has gone wrong for me. And knowing that, I'm totally sure he's had some things happen to him where he's definitely the victim, but no doubt he's also probably been a little bit of the issue sometimes too, because he's a bit abrasive, I think is a fair word to describe this guy.
He's like a wildcat or maybe a Wolverine.
Something like that. And he's wearing headphones the whole time we're talking, like large headphones. So I'm not totally sure if he's listening to something and not really paying attention to me at all. But basically I told him, look, I can go with you to the hospital so you're not by yourself. It's like, so there's nothing to worry about. Like, cause he was saying people would like throw him in and out of his chair and he was scared and all of that. So I told him I'd go with him. He had lost his flashlight, and it was night, obviously. So I put a headlamp on the back of his electric wheelchair because I couldn't load up his large electric wheelchair into my car. And so he zooms off down the road and gets my number so he can call me when he gets to the hospital. So he gets to the hospital almost an hour later, because it goes like 4 miles an hour, his wheelchair thing. So he calls me and I meet him up there. And as we roll into the emergency room here, what's a good name to call this guy? I don't want to use his real name. What's a good name?
Jack.
Okay, fair enough. Jack.
Jack from Lost. Listeners, picture Jack from Lost right now as he finishes his story.
Yeah. So we roll in.
He's very handsome.
So we roll in, and he rolls up to the, you know, initial desk, and they're like, sir, what's your name? And he says, I'm Jack from Lost. And birthday and all of that, right? So that exchange happens, and like, I would noticed it was a lot shorter than normally the questions are and stuff, because I've been in the emergency room for myself and other people probably far more than the normal person,
right?
And so this lady, there was two people behind the desk and one nurse sitting in front of the desk, and she just looked annoyed as soon as he walked in, rolled in, I guess.
Which, what's that communicate to you immediately.
Yeah, well,
that he's been there probably several times.
It's hard to tell because I've also had nurses who are just not happy that they have to deal with somebody else. So yeah. So you know, there's red flag, but who knows what it really means at that moment. So she grabs the bracelet thing, puts it on him, and we go immediately back into triage, which has never happened for me. I even saw a guy at that hospital once who was cutting down a tree with a chainsaw, slipped, and cut into the bone in his thigh with a chainsaw, and was saying, he was laughing, saying he pulled as much wood out as he could. That guy didn't go immediately back. They took a couple minutes, but we went immediately back. And so we go back into the triage room, and the nurse doesn't even look at him. She types a couple things, goes over, gets his blood pressure, is getting his temperature, and the RN walks in and goes, "Hey, Jack from Lost."
So she knew his name?
Immediately.
Oh, wow.
And she steps...
Well, I mean, he is really...
And then she steps
recognize,
through the doorway, but... and two police officers walk in after her. Lots of red flags there. And so she's saying... She, like, she sighs heavily among as soon as she sees him. It's like, oh, man. What can we do for you tonight? And he's like... He dives right into the same story he had told me. And I was like, Jack from Lost. No, not right now. Like, that, you don't need to tell the whole story. You just need to say why we're here,
yeah,
right
why
now.
Why are we at the hospital?
Because that's a long story. You know, plane crash, getting on an island, all of that. Yeah. We don't need that whole story.
I've seen this dog.
Yeah. For some reason, there's a polar bear. So then she says, look, for us to help you, you have to have a medical reason to be here. And you're not allowed to use racial slurs towards the staff anymore. And you can't threaten anybody. And, like, starts going down the list of all of these things, right? As the cops walk in and get behind him. And then one of the cops kind of cuts her off and says, and we have to go through all of your bags. Which he's got a couple on the side and then two backpacks hanging off the back. And they said, we have to go through your bags and destroy anything that's illegal. And store your bags in these red plastic hazard bags while you're here, so none of the contamination can get out. And he said, because you can't be bringing dope and stuff into the hospital anymore.
Oh my gosh.
And so Jack,
dude, after Lost finished, Jack had...
I know, it was rough.
I haven't seen him in any movies or TV. I'm just glad he's in Hattiesburg and yeah, that you found him.
That's what happened.
Yeah.
And Jack from Lost was like, hey, it's fine. I'll just put my bags in your car. And the cop looked at me and he was like, you can do that. And so we all stand there for a moment of silence when it's like, I'm not going to put bags covered in poop with drugs in them in my car, is what's happening in my head.
So Jack from Lost is saying he wants to put the bag in your car or the police officer's car?
No, wants to put his bags in my car.
Initially, I thought the cop was looking at you like you were his counsel, like his legal counsel. Like, you should probably step in right now.
It did. A lot of that did happen.
Yeah.
Because they said, no, you can't leave. Like, if you leave, you can't come back in. He can take them out and put them in his car. But then he looked at me and said, you know, anything you put in your car, you're liable for, right? And I was like, yeah, I know.
So you told me you didn't put these bags
I was like,
in
Jack,
his car.
You got to let him search your bags. That's, you got to do that. If you're going to get cleaned up and stuff, like, first step is you have to let them search your bags. Because I can't take them out and put them in my car. I don't have any room for them. That's what I went with.
Yeah.
I panicked. And so he gets upset that the cops are telling him what to do. The RN starts yelling at him as well, saying things like, we told you this last night when we kicked you out.
Oh, wow.
The cops are getting mad. And so I'm in between all of these people saying, shut up, Jack. What do y'all need from him? Okay, are you going to let them do that? Like, everybody calm down. It's all going to be okay. Let's just figure out what needs to happen, right?
So you are now the ombudsperson for all these professionals and crazy Jack.
Yeah. Jack from Lost, man.
Dude.
He's a handful. And he starts saying, well, I can't afford to get the assisted living place because my dad won't give me my money. And one of the cops says, Jack, I've known you for, what, 20 years? I know your dad. I know your whole family. I know what your situation is. That's not the case. All of that fun stuff. And the nurse is getting mad, so I kind of pull her to the side and I'm like, hey, what can we do for him? Whatever. I'm able to get her calmed down just because I'm like, look, you're not the bad guy. I'm fully aware of that. He's a jerk. But can we help the jerk at all? Like, I'll be the mediator as much as needs be. Y'all won't have to talk to him much, kind of thing. While, like, looking back to make sure he doesn't, like, grab the cop's gun or something, because I could totally see him doing that. So she goes to get some paperwork. I'm talking to Jack and the cops, and it comes down to them saying, you have to decide right now what you're going to do. Like, you have to get out or prove that you have a medical reason to be here. And he said, pooping yourself is not a medical cause.
Yeah, incontinence is not enough to go to the emergency room.
Which, it was clear, he said, but I'm covered in bed sores. And so I have open sores that is getting all this stuff in it. And one of the nurses, the one who hadn't said anything so far, goes, yeah, they're bad. I've seen them. Oh. And all the nurses that were, like, standing outside watching were all like, yeah, they're bad. So apparently he's been there enough that every nurse in this hospital has had to clean his bed sores at some point. And so they say, look, we can just take you into this room that we have and hose you down if you want. I get that sounds bad, but we can do that. But we still have to search your bags. And so he gets mad. And so I'm like, all right, everybody hold on. Jack from Lost, are you going to let them draw blood and search your bags? And he said, well, I will if they, and I was like, okay, so that's a no. Like, if you're putting conditions on it, there, right. It's a no. So let's go. So the cops escort us out of the hospital. And then we stand outside for a while trying to figure out what could possibly happen for him as a positive this night. And it eventually, he gets mad because he tells me that I don't understand how disability and stuff works. And I tell him, I'm literally on the same thing you are. So I do know how it works. And so he gets mad, yells at the cops some, and then just 4 miles an hour speeds off down the road, mad at us. Yells some things as he's rolling away, whatever, right?
So he's still covered in
covered
his own excrement.
So he's definitely pooped himself a lot, but the smell of urine was so strong I couldn't smell poop, which I've never had that happen before. It was intense. So he rolls off, and you know, final handshakes with the cops. I feel like now I have a couple cop friends from this weird experience of me and Jack from Lost.
Shout out to Hattiesburg Police.
Yeah, they
handled themselves.
They did handle it well.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And so he rolls off, and at this point it's 11:30 at night. So I've been doing this for 2 hours, and so then I go and I'm talking to my fiance and telling her all about it, and like, this was very, very strange. This is a thing that I've done tonight. Is go with Jack from Lost, covered in his own mess, and argued with nurses and cops for an hour and a half before he stormed off down the road in his wheelchair. So then, you'd have to mix a lot of profanities into.
Okay.
So then, I'm just really glad that they were white cops, because if he had thrown some slurs in with other stuff he was saying, I would have had to be like, man, you're on your own. That's not,
dude.
I can't do that.
Right.
So then my phone rings at 1:30, and I look at it and it says Jack from Lost. I'm like, I can't think of a good reason why he would be calling me right now. So
if I was in your place, I couldn't think of a good reason why I would pick up at 1:30.
Right. So then he calls again and calls again. I'm like, all right, maybe he's like in real danger. I'll check on him. I answer, Hey, Jack from Lost, what's up? Man, I made it to the Walgreens on 49, and I went to the back, and I took a shower, and then I was getting my clean clothes on, and I can't put my pants on. I need you to come put pants on me.
Wow.
So I was like, okay. It was literally that much of a pause of like, I just want to sleep. I got a bunch of stuff I got to do tomorrow. I don't really want to put pants on you right now. But I go up to Walgreens, and on my way, I call my fiance, because before doing ridiculous things, I like to let her know just in case something goes wrong. There's some level of like she knew beforehand. And so I tell her, hey, Jack from Lost just called me from Walgreens, and he needs me to put his pants on him. So I'm going to try to do that real quick. And she says, well, be careful. Like, I don't want it to be a trap of some sort.
Right.
Which doesn't help. Which, to be fair, she didn't mean it bad, but she does owe me probably a rough situation in that case, because years ago I did text her at one point after she had gone to sleep with a text that just said, hey, there's a guy outside covered in blood. He said not to call the cops, so me and Robert are going to take him to the hospital, and then didn't answer my phone for 2 hours.
So, maybe we'll tell that story at a later point.
So that happened before. So I go and I walk into Walgreens and I go to the back, and you know, they have like the first door you open, and then you go back into the section that's got bathrooms and janitorial and whatever. I open that door and I'm just punched in the face with a smell of poop. It is overwhelming. So I walk in there, like try to, you know, prepare myself for whatever I might see, and then knock on the bathroom door. And Jack from Lost says, it's open. So I open the door, and everything is wet.
No.
The entire bathroom is soaked.
No.
And I had been thinking on the way over, I didn't think there was a shower in Walgreens. There's not a shower in Walgreens.
There's a sink in Walgreens.
So I open the door, and the first thing I see is everything's wet. The second thing is his backpack is in the urinal. The third thing is I see him sitting in the stall with the door open facing me, t-shirt, headphones, shoes, paper towel working as a censored bar. And so I look at him and then look away, see the sink, and the only thing on the sink is the cup that holds the toilet brush. And so I said, hey, was it wet before you got in here, or did you do all this? Because it was, the entire place was soaked, which I'm not sure how you even managed that. And he said, no, it's fine. There's a drain in the floor. And so I was like, okay, so what happened? And he said, well, I came in here, and the only thing I could find was this cup that the toilet brush was in. And so I rinsed it out and then took my clothes off and just started throwing water all over myself, and then used the hand soap to wash myself. Yeah, I realized that everything, I'm basically in a toilet at this point, because he's washed poop and urine all over with toilet cup water. And so I'm like, all right, let's get some pants on you, so we can get out of here. And go over, and he hands me some shorts. And apparently, his hip has been shattered, and so he can't use it. It messed up everything bad enough. He can't use either leg, so he can't lift them anything. He's a bigger guy too. He probably weighs 260. And one of his arms doesn't work well. So he's got one arm he's working with. So I have to pick up his leg and like try to get the shorts over. Pick up the other leg, try to get the shorts over. Which, my hands don't work well and my arms don't extend. So Then when I get them to his knees, he has to push himself up with his one working arm, which he can get about an inch up, and he's basically just throwing himself up and can't hold himself. So I have to inch these pants on him. And since my arms don't extend, I have to be like right up in there. And so I'm like arms
and this
around
is obviously
him.
A multiple person job. Like, yes. Like two CNAs should be doing this right now.
Yeah.
Or three. Shoot.
And so I'm scooting these pants on him, and it took me probably 10 minutes to get pants on him. But I'm about halfway through. He's removed the paper towel because we've gotten to that part of the pants job. When it, in my head, I hear Lacey May say, "Be careful, it might be a trap." when you're right up in a half naked homeless man who just bathed in a Walgreens bathroom with a toilet brush cup, you don't want to think this might be a trap of some sort, because I have no idea what that trap would entail. No clue at all, right?
So, I'm picturing a lobster person who's just saying, "It's a trap."
Yes,
it's a trap.
Absolutely. So get the pants on him. Luckily, no trap. And then he says, "And I need to change my shoes." So I take his shoes off of him. And when I pull his foot out of the shoe...
No. Don't. Why is this still happening?
There was a smell. So apparently, if you bathe the way he did, all the poop just runs down into your shoes. So I'm holding these poop shoes. And then he was like, "You can throw those away." Because I was standing there just looking at them, holding them, wondering about my life, basically. And then throw those away, get his other shoes on him as best as I can. And he says, "All right, now put my backpack back on the back of my chair." And the straps are like in pressed against the side of the urinal, like the back and bottom of the urinal. So I have to grab those straps and put that on him. And so I put that on, and then I feel, you know, major necessity to wash myself as much as possible. But I washed my arms and, you know, get the soap off and all that, and realized, like, he had poop hands touching the soap dispenser and the sink and every, like, nothing's clean. There's nothing I can do in here to be clean. And so
have you gagged at this point?
I haven't.
Oh, wow.
And so then I go hold the door open for him, hold the other door open for him, and went straight to the pharmacy and asked the pharmacist. I was like, "How much hand sanitizer do you have?" And he was like, "Don't worry, I got something for you." And he grabs this like mister thing that's more than a spray bottle, because it was intense. And he said, "This is 91% alcohol. I got you." And I stood spread eagle, as the pharmacist in Walgreens hosed me down with alcohol. And then...
Does he know what happened?
The guy had asked him for help, and he was like, "Oh, I wish I could, but I can't. Liability. So you have to call someone to come help you."
Which is totally fair.
Totally fair, and an amazing loophole for him. So I start to walk out, and then I'm like, "No, I have to let somebody know what just happened in that bathroom." So I find an employee and I tell her, "Ma'am, you really, really need to clean every bit of that bathroom." She's like, "Okay, why?" It's like, "Well, I don't know if you saw the guy that came in, but he had a lot of poop on him and just bathed in your bathroom, and there's water everywhere that he got everywhere with the toilet brush cup." And she's like, was stocking shelves, not really looking at me as I said it, and froze when I said he used the toilet brush cup. And so she was standing there just kind of looking at the shelves, holding this thing. And I was like, "All right, have a good night."
Oh my God.
So I walk out the front door, and another employee was out there, and she was like, "What was happening back there?" So I gave her the quick, "He took a shower back there.
... poop tornado." Yeah,
that kind of thing. And she started to ask me more questions, and I was like, "I don't know. I've known this guy for like 4 hours, so I don't know. And she just looked at me really confused. So, you know, to her as well, I was like, "All right, have a good night." And walk over, and I'd parked like right outside the front door. and I'm getting in my car. And as I'm getting in my car, Jack from Lost rolls out of the front door, and I sit down, and he goes, "All right, talk to you tomorrow."
And that's it.
And that's the story of the second homeless man I've put pants on.
Golly. Ugh. I was ready for the police to get called to Walgreens. If I worked at Walgreens, I would have called the cops. Like,
I mean, the employees didn't really know what was happening. They didn't see him roll back there.
I feel so bad for the Walgreens employees that have to go in and clean this poop apocalypse that just happened in this bathroom. It is so gross.
It was rough. Definitely rough. So if anybody's been wondering where Jack from Lost is, there you go.
Found him.
I'm just glad I haven't used the bathroom at the Walgreens.
Yeah. I hope at some point, the bubble guts hit you and you have to run in there and you're in a Walgreens bathroom on 49. And then all of a sudden you're like, "Oh no, this is it."
You know, it's terrible. I travel for my job. I stop at public restrooms all the time. I mean, I already have a small bladder. Now my mind is racing to think about how many bathrooms have I gone into where something similar to that has happened. And also, why don't we tip our Walgreens and Walmart employees?
Yeah, anybody in the Hattiesburg area, if you go to the Walgreens on 49, definitely tip them and say, "This is for Jack from Lost."
Jeez, they'll know exactly who that is. I mean, it's a very recognizable face. So, we do have another story that involves the night that you got a knock on the door that you and I were living in downtown Hattiesburg. I was already asleep at this time, and somebody was at the door named, I believe, Robert Reeder.
Yeah.
"Hey, Robert. How you doing, man?"
That's a bold assumption that he listens.
He listens to everyone, dude. He's our biggest fan. That's fine. "What up, girl? How you doing?"
So we, as David said, we were living in a two-apartment building. It was us, and then around the corner, there was one other that was David's buddy, Robert. And so they knew each other well enough that they would talk and sit at this table that was outside and have some conversations and whatever. But I had mostly just met Robert in passing. That was it. Like, y'all were
new friends, but
we were acquaintances at best.
Were you Facebook friends?
No, this was I don't think last names had been exchanged.
Right.
Type budding friendship.
I will jump in and say that Robert is somebody that you immediately are like, "Hey, this is a good guy. Like, I could be buds with this dude." Like, he gives off a really great first impression, even though y'all didn't know each other.
Yeah. So we didn't really know each other at all. There's a knock on the door. David went to sleep maybe 20 minutes before, but David is instantly no longer with us when David leaves town. That's basically the way it works.
When I go down, I go down hard.
Yeah, plan on getting together with David later, just the next day. He's no longer available. So there's a knock on the door, and it's 11 o'clock or so. And I go to the door, and it's Robert, and he's like, "Hey, there's a guy out here that's covered in blood and not wearing a shirt, and he said not to call the cops. And so he needs to go to the hospital, so I'm going to take him to the hospital, but I thought I should let somebody know before I take him." And I was like, "Well, give me a minute, and I'm going with you, because that's not something you should really do on your own." And so I go in, get dressed, come back out, and I go around the corner, and there's this guy, no shirt, but blood smeared all over his upper body, his pants are soaked with blood, his shirt is wrapped around his forearm, and is just covered in blood as well. And
now, we've been in this apartment for how long?
Not that long.
Maybe a month. maybe. And we're in downtown Hattiesburg thinking, everything's safe. We're good to go.
Well, apparently what had happened was Robert was sitting in his car. He had just gotten back from work. And he was texting with a friend before he got out of his car. And he just texted his friend, I think I'm going to watch a scary movie. I'm just in the mood for something scary. And there's a knock on his car window. And he kind of, you know, blows it off thinking it's David or whatever. And then another knock, and he looks up, and there's a guy with no color left. Like, he's absolutely pale and covered in blood. And asks him, will you take me to the hospital? Don't call the cops. So when I had gone outside, Robert
which
was
is always something you want to hear.
Absolutely.
Don't call the cops.
Yeah.
No need for a horror film.
In any situation,
take a look. Yeah.
You don't want someone to start the interaction with, don't call the cops.
Right.
But Robert was inside getting some towels because he was about to take a guy covered in blood in his car and was going to just put as many towels as he could down. And so I walk out, and it's just this guy leaning against the wall, holding his arm. And I was like, hey, man, like, what's going on? And he tries to run away from me, which means he took him 3 tries to stop leaning on the wall. And when he moves, there's just blood, like, basically in a print of him against the wall. And just, like, keeps stumbling into the wall, leaving, like, polka-dotted spots of blood all
like
over this wall.
Like, he's painting our apartment wall with his
just
blood,
people. So much blood. And so he starts to walk around this building, and I was like, I'm not going to chase him. I'm going to wait for Robert to get out here, and we can figure out what to do with this situation. And so he comes back out, and I was like, he took off around that building. I don't know. We should go find him. And so we walk around, and there's some businesses and another apartment complex thing that's got just a few apartments in it. And so there's a car parked on the street, and this guy's leaning against the car, and you can tell he's tried to make it past the car, but just rubbed himself all the way down it. And so it's just smeared in, like, coagulated blood all down this car. And so we go, and we're like, hey, you need us to, like, help you get to the car. Like, can we call an ambulance, call the cops, anything? He's like, no, don't call the cops. I'm fine. Let's just get to the car. He's like, do y'all have any weed? I'm like, no, we don't. And if we did, this is not the time. We just need you to live right now. And so we talk to him for a couple minutes and convince him, all right, let's go get in the car. And so he takes the first step, pushing off of the car to be able to walk back with us, and pushes off, eyes roll back, and face plants hard on the concrete, just completely limp, slams to the ground. And so Robert grabs him and starts, like, has him in his lap and is shaking the guy, because he's like, I'm not going to have this dude die right here. So backhands him so hard, just, like, knuckles across the face, and just keeps slapping this dude until the dude comes to. And we're, like, trying to keep him talking. He falls. I immediately call 911, because I'm like, he's going to die in your car if we put him in your car. So I call 911, which, as I was getting ready, is when I had texted Lacey May, hey, there's a guy out here covered in blood. He said not to call the cops. I'll let you know what happens.
And for our listeners, real quick, you saw this happen, but if you have never seen someone pass out and hit the ground, like, it's really disturbing, right?
Yeah,
to,
like,
see somebody,
like, no,
check
not
out.
Trying to catch themselves.
Yeah,
like,
to
they
check
are
out
not
and just,
there.
It's like a giant sack of whatever, just hitting the ground super violently. Oh, man. I just like picturing Robert, of all people, just slapping the crap out of this guy.
You
slapping
him
not
like crazy.
Die on me.
Yeah. So after I text Lacey May, I just put my phone away and then called 911 and was like, hey, there's a guy here. He's bleeding out really bad. And he needs an ambulance, whatever. Tell him where we're at, hang up, actually, no, the 911 operator hung up on me. I've always heard stay on the line with a 911 operator when stuff's happening, especially if you're like, hey, this guy's about to die. He might be dead right now. I'm not totally sure. You're supposed to stay on the line. And she was like, all right, I'll send somebody. Click.
Yeah, apparently it was a full moon. Maybe it was a full moon, and Hattiesburg was just lit up that night. Like, there was some bad stuff going
down. It was strange. So I go back over, and Robert's trying to talk to this guy to keep him awake. And so he tells us multiple different names. And he also tells us...
What's up, guys? I'm Derek.
We're like, what happened? Because when he had fallen, and after Robert woke him up by slapping him, his arm had flailed out when he fell. So Robert moved his arm, and the shirt fell off, and his entire forearm was just open.
Oh, my gosh.
And not bleeding anymore. And if, like, across veins and everything is open and there's no blood coming out, that's typically not a good sign. I'm not a doctor, but I don't think that's good. So Robert wraps a towel around him, and he's holding this guy's arm up wrapped in a towel while periodically slapping him to keep him awake. We're trying to carry on conversations, and this guy just keeps asking us for weed. He just really needs a hit.
Hey, guys, I know I'm in a bad situation right now, but... Do you have any grass?
And we were like, so what happened? And he went from like, I was mugged to all different kinds of things. My car broke down and I was mugged. Well, where? And he basically said like 10, 15 miles away. And we were like, there's no way he walked that far. That didn't happen. But he kept telling us different stories. And every once in a while we'd be like, so tell us again what happened. Well, first, can I get some weed? No, you can't have any weed.
No, wait. Let me tell you. Can I get some green?
Yeah. I'll tell you what happened, but first, where are we with that weed?
Hey, man, is your girlfriend coming?
We're there for way too long. Way too long from having called 911 and said, there's someone who's about to die here. And then... basically every cop in Hattiesburg shows up. Like, and I think two ambulances, but like every cop car, which David's bed was near the window. No curtains up, just blinds. Cop cars everywhere. He had no idea anything happened.
Y'all,
not the slightest
clue. Y'all, I was in Z-Land, man.
There was lots of sound, lots of cops, lights like crazy. No idea. And so these cops come.
Wait, can I get some weed?
And so they're all just standing around while poor Robert has this guy in his lap, holding his arm together, holding it up. They just stand around and are like, "So what happened? Like, we don't know, but shouldn't you take over at this point?"
Right.
Be like, this ends our involvement in this case. And they eventually, like, open up some like, bandages and all of that, wrap it up, and load him up. And basically every cop that showed up came to ask us, did he really keep asking y'all for a weed? Yeah, he absolutely did. Every cop thought that was very fascinating for some reason. And so then we go from, like, people everywhere, this dying man on the ground, lights all over, to, like, everybody was like, all right, we're out, and just jumped in their cars, and everybody was gone. So we're just left standing there. There's blood everywhere. His bloody shirt's still laying there. There's just everything that they opened to work on him with. Just the wrappers are everywhere and stuff. And so we get a stick and pick up his bloody shirt and take it and whatever. And then it was like, all right, well, have a good night, I guess. Like, I don't know. Dude, I mean,
it's like,
guess,
it's
I guess
like
we
having
go to sleep now.
Yeah, it's like having that first date that you didn't know was gonna happen. It's great. It's really intense. You know, you consider possibly smoking some grass, and and then you say, "I'll see you later."
So that's kind of part of the story.
I was actually hoping for David to have randomly woken up and walked outside at this point.
To us carrying a bloody shirt everywhere.
And you just with
what
a bloody
happened?
Shirt, like,
right.
I don't know, man.
So, Robert, at this time, was a smoker and obviously needed a cigarette at that point. And so he jumps in his car to go to the gas station to get some cigarettes and got pulled over. And a cop walks to the door and he's covered in someone else's blood. Luckily, I mean, you know, it was on the radio enough that everybody knew. So he could just say, I was the one at this address with this happening. But he got pulled over covered in someone else's blood.
It's chocolate?
So the next morning I went and I figured there's a bloody mess in front of this apartment building door. And this one car is covered in blood. And so I went and knocked on a couple of the doors, found out whose car it was. And I was like, hey, this is what happened, and explained it. And he was like, oh, I assumed it was something like that. That was his only reaction to walking outside with the side of his car covered in blood and like dried huge patches of blood on the concrete in front of his car. Like, so it looked like someone had been butchered in front of his car. And he was like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. Okay, well, have a good day, man.
Yep. Really so, glad we chose to live where we chose to live.
So then the next day, Lacey May goes to lunch with a friend that she's not seen in forever. And this girl, she'd worked like not far from where our apartment was, like across the street and down a little bit from us. And she was like, you will never guess what happened to me yesterday. this morning, I guess it was. She was like, I showed up for work and there was a broken window and blood everywhere with a trail leading away from my business and leading basically towards where our apartment was. And Lacey May got to be like, I know what happened. And so they were talking and like tried to look the guy up and looked him up on Facebook, and he was asking for prayers for, you know, he had an accident. And was really hoping he would be able to heal and whatever. But he had left his bloody hat at the scene, and his Facebook profile picture was him wearing that hat. So the cops just got to show up at Forest General and be like, hey, you're under arrest. You're going to deny that you did this or whatever? But yeah. So
dude.
He had tried to break in through a tiny, like, 4x4 window that was far enough away from everything that, like, it was a pointless window to break in. He couldn't have done anything with it. And it slipped and fallen off the rail and sliced his arm to pieces with broken glass. And nice. Then wandered to our apartment.
And that's the story of what happened on that crazy night when Robert knocked on our door and I was in Z-Land.
And that was the night that Robert and I fell in love.
Oh, yeah.
Mm.
Y'all love each other. That completes
the story. Yes.
Yeah.
Basically, no, it's I just see Robert every once in a while still, like once a year or so, and every time I'm like, oh yeah, that guy almost died.
Nice.
It's something I forget about until I see Robert Reeder.
So to our folks out there who are still enjoying these episodes, you can always support us on patreon.com/everythingisokay. We would love any support you can bring to the table. It could be $1, $5, and we will occasionally put stuff up there that only our Patreon listeners will get. And we also will often have Patreon supporters give us episode ideas, and then we run with that and make an episode because of your potential idea. So please consider checking that out. And if you have a spare $1, $5, whatever a month to support us, that would be great.
Yeah, you can check us out on our website, everythingisokay.net. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter. Please send us ideas.
The great hub to go to is definitely our website, because you can go to all the different links from there.
Yeah, and every artist that we have on an episode from a music standpoint has given us basically free reign with their music to play it. And so we do a link in the episode notes when you're listening to the podcast, and follow them, listen to them, buy their music, support them. Brad actually has one of the artists, O. Jeremiah, is actually coming through Oklahoma City When are they playing?
Tomorrow.
Pre-season, Brad?
Tomorrow, yeah.
Okay, so our listeners won't hear that. But, yeah, Brad's actually helping them out and a huge fan of their music. So check out O Jeremiah for sure.
Well, with that, I'm going to go ahead and end this episode. I'm Brad Stair.
I'm David Meggs.
I'm James Eisenhower.
And everything is okay.
And for Jack from Lost.
And for Jack from... everything is okay, people.
If I built a city out of sticks and stones, would you take it home and call it your own? If I built a castle brick by brick, would your kingdom come or have a problem with it? If I built a river out of just my tears, would you build a bridge or learn how to swim? If I built an orchestra with brass and string, would you sing with me or would you whistle out of key? I don't mind what you did, I just wanna know, does it hurt like this when you think about it? I don't mind what you did, I just wanna know, does it hurt like this when you think about it? If I was the sun as high as you could see, would you be the clouds and sweep the rug out for me? If I was a tree tall and green, would you be the winter and blow me to smithereens? I don't mind what you did, I just wanna know, does it hurt like this when you think about it? I don't mind what you did, I just wanna know, does it hurt like this when you think about it? I will be your punching bag if you let me punch you back. Let's just see how long it lasts. Quit riding my coattails and call you a cab. I don't mind what you did, I just wanna know, does it hurt like this when you think about it? I don't mind what you did, I just wanna know, does it hurt like this when you think about it?